All right. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the webinar today. It's entitled The Big Green Bag of Promise, Enterprise Shopify. We have a series of topics coming up to you. My name is Rick Watson, host of the Watson Weekly. Excited to be here for a Enterprise Shopify focused webinar. They say it couldn't happen. It has happened. How's it going? What do we think? How's it going? On the way there, while there, we have a number of interesting topics. We actually have a series coming up for you. This is the first part in the three-part series. True story, I had the first, Scott and I were at lunch, and they're like, would you be interested in being at a Shopify webinar? He's like, sure, Scott was in. And then I had this conversation with Alara about the content, and we had too much content for one webinar. It was like, we could not cover all of this in like 20, 30 minutes. This is the first part where we're going to talk about the business case for Enterprise Shopify. It's very hard to convince someone to come up there. So you're going to see content this week, which is Thursday, June 4th, then next Thursday, June 11th, and then next Thursday, June 18th. Our webinar is sponsored by Avalara, a domain, and Pattern, which is part of Domain. Domain is one of the most popular and reliable system integrators in the Shopify universe. And Pattern was an acquisition recently, is a design-centric firm, not Shopify exclusive, but they're part of Domain. And Avalara has been a great tax, agentic tax sponsor this year for the program. On our webinar today, which is around business case for Shopify, and we're not going to show many slides. We're going to get back into the conversation and introduce our lovely webinar participants. We have Scott Lux, the VP of Digital Commerce at Stanley 1913, Laura Verrett, Chief Digital and Customer Officer at Reitmans, and Renee Halverson is the Chief Marketing Officer at MarineLayer. So I wanted to welcome everyone here and let them introduce sort of like one fun fact around themselves. We know who you are and your title, but how did you come to working with Shopify? Let's start with Alara.
Hey, hi, everyone. How fun fact and how did I start working with Shopify? Fun fact, I am in retail and love retail. Though I started my career in pharmaceutical and it was far too slow paced for me. So I said, let's double down and go into retail and then further into commerce. And so working at pace is something that I greatly enjoy. And that's one of the reasons that we migrated onto Shopify, being able to be agile and be closer to our customer and do all of the things we want to do without needing IT in such a big way.
Thanks, Laura. Renee?
Yeah, sure. Hi, I'm Renee Lips Halverson. I've been at MarineLayer for 11 years. And before that, I had experience being at much larger brands. I was at Gap Inc. for a while. And we've actually been with Shopify for over 10 years. I think it was like my first big
one
project.
One of the few.
I know.
Right?
My first big project, we were trying to figure out where we were going to cut over from. When I joined MarineLayer, they were actually mostly retail. They didn't have a very big online footprint. And I remember reviewing lots of different options that were out there. I feel like the metaphor that kept coming back was like, you know, we were a smaller business. We could try to invest in like some beautiful Porsche style environment for us that would have all these bells and whistles, or we could try to pick, like, I think we equated it to like a Volvo. it was going to move quick with us and it was going to have the right bells and whistles and the right safety components. And it was important for us to make that decision. And I'm stunned. I do very much believe that being a part of Shopify has been a huge part of how we've been so successful and we've scaled our business.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, fun fact, when you said fun fact, I just felt like I would share. I think MarineLayer was, and this was me literally, one of the first brands to approach Shopify when we got approached by a patent troll in very early days. Like one of the old school ones. And yeah. I remember they were so like, it was such a young business. They were so enthusiastic to partner with us. And I was very grateful for that experience to really work with the Shopify team too and work that out.
It's great. Thanks, yeah. Renee. And Scott.
Hi, Scott Lux. I lead digital commerce for Stanley 1913 and joined them about 4 months ago. Prior to that, my journey was pretty interesting. It's primarily been Demandware, Salesforce ecosystem. And the interesting part with that, it was always the non-original or core Salesforce products. I worked with Demandware, got acquired, Commerce Cloud, ExactTarget, now Marketing Cloud. But I had the opportunity to launch the very, very first Demandware storefront with Kiehl's, which was the first one at L'Oreal Brands. And then Renee, similar, was at Intermix under the Gap umbrella. So I feel like I've seen billion-dollar brands running this massive ecosystem with Salesforce. And my introduction to Shopify was through Esprit. And we were relaunching in the U.S., and had a pretty substantial business in Europe, but was running primarily all Salesforce end-to-end. We had every cloud product you could imagine. And it's been really interesting looking at moving off of that at Esprit prior to their bankruptcy in the U.S. was really for cost savings, tech debt, which I'm sure we'll get into. And then at Stanley, it's been a totally different ecosystem. We do have a little bit of Salesforce in there, primarily around data cloud, but really, how do we move as fast as we can? Can they support what we always call our high heat moments? You've probably seen some of our collaboration and really being able to push Shopify to the boundaries as far as the amount of orders that we can handle almost per minute. So it's been an interesting juxtaposition between this massive enterprise stack and the nimble side of Shopify, but probably Renee, where we've been able to push kind of this notion that Shopify is not enterprise and really break that concept at Stanley, just given the amount of volume we need to push through in a given moment.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think this is a good lead in to our first question. And just remind everyone, this is not like not a Shopify sponsored webinar. We just wanted to hear from people who are, you know, have been using it. And I think there's not a lot of discussion out there that isn't in this situation where operators can say the good, the bad, the ugly. So I wanted to open it with Alara. You just completed basically a three banner re-platform to Shopify. No one migrates a work like this. Webinar is about the business case. So like, why do you do it? How did you decide to Shopify? How do you convince someone else to do it? No one wants to know. This is something no one wants to do.
Agreed. I mean,
how did you know it was time?
Whoa, well,
heavy sigh.
That's a heavy one. How did we know it was time? I mean, I think, you know, everybody in the retail landscape understands that, you know, the I'll call them the COVID years were not easy and investments were made very strategically. And so a lot of investments were not made into our tech stack because, you know, we had a decent, solid tech stack. But as we were looking on, you know, the years to come and what's coming, what's changing and where we want to focus as a business, we want to focus like any business in your core competency, which is fashion retail, not managing an army of developers and, you know, Salesforce engineers and all of those things. And so when looking at, you know, what was truly important to us, I mentioned it earlier, being really close to our customer is really important to us. We need to move with them, be where they are, and kind of let the quote unquote experts focus on making sure that the checkout is optimized and all of those things. And so we took a look at many different options. You helped us out with some of that process. And so, you know, but, you know, Shopify came out the leader in many areas, the first of which being that closeness to the customer, bringing that agility, their level of clarity on their roadmap and where they're going. And so we leverage a lot of that to bring to the table. It is, you know, there's always a dollars and cents conversation, but this was really a strategic conversation above just the dollars and cents. And I think that's what's important to bring to the table. How does this fit into your overall business strategy?
Yeah. So, I mean, you're saying IT dependency and agility is a big factor. Cost isn't a reason to move, I'm hearing. And I've heard you say the similar thing, Scott, although I think historically Shopify has been like maybe its first name as lower cost and innovation. You can't move because of cost. I don't know. How do you, where does the cost savings narrative live in your mind? Is it a big part of the case or is it not?
Yeah, I would say at this point, it's really not, because the cost savings, the way I view it, is more opportunity cost, because I think that's the biggest shift in the last 10 years, it was always this concept of drive as much traffic to your storefront, regardless of where that consumer is. And the other shift, I think, predicating that is e-com, for me at least, was always kind of the stepchild, if you will, right? If you go back 10 years ago, you had kind of CIOs, CTOs. It's like, oh, we manage our big infrastructure, you know, back office, supply chain, and e-com, you go do your thing. That may live under marketing or wherever, because it was relatively new. And I think the idea there, you could lean into a little bit of cost savings, because it was always looked at as a marketing expense or another line item. But now with the ecosystem having to be fully functional, you cannot look at a migration without looking at, you know, OMS, connectors, downstream impact to ERP, supply chain, product catalog. So it more becomes, to me, what's the opportunity cost of not having a ecosystem that can communicate with each other, has the right data and data governance and protocol, but really unlocks how do you push digital commerce to where your consumer is. So whether that's a marketplace, whether that's TikTok shop, whether it's connected TV and streaming, or whether it's leveraging point of sale in store. To me, that's the way you have to frame the conversation, is driving a little bit on the innovation side, but is thinking about the cost savings and making sure you have an ecosystem that can play nice with each other, and then is set up so you have reliable data governance that you can trust and really measure the impact and reaction that's needed to drive your business across all channels.
For you, Renee, you've made this interesting point that you've scaled pretty far without a CTO. Mm-hmm. Like, so you're in the other bucket where you've been with a solution for a while. It's gotten you to a certain point. Do you see it? You've also upgraded within it, which has unlocked new opportunities and challenges too. So help me think through your business case to stay. Or to, as you think about the path forward, everyone's always re-justifying what they're doing because that's just the world we're in.
I don't think a lot about how important Shopify, or maybe the choice that we made 10 years ago, was empowering us to scale the way that we have. But if I look back, it truly has been so impactful, particularly in our ability to kind of like react and learn and protect our agility and just try a lot of new things. We've not had to put a CTO in place or had a visionary specifically around our tech stack or how we were going to be future-proofed making choices, because we were able just to kind of participate in 30-day trials for free, or watch somebody else do it that was on a Shopify site and then think, gosh, I'm going to work for MarineLayer specifically, and then put those things in place within 6 months. It's been huge for us. And for a long time, there were a lot of limitations from a creative standpoint, what you were able to do. And so the biggest limitations felt like on the brand side, like being able to deploy video in certain places or putting like marketing content embedded into your PLPs. And so we had to kind of compromise in some ways when we built our first theme. And I think it's been amazing over the years seeing Shopify continue to innovate and invest in the ways that you can personalize your theme. And so most recently, we actually worked with Pattern to develop a brand new Shopify 2.0 theme. It has a whole new system in place where we can manage our content and just like all the different versions that we can create, all the different brand storytelling tools. It's I think our eyes are bigger than our stomach for like how much we can create and how much our brand actually, or how many places we can send customers to. And so I think we're learning to be a little bit more measured and intentional around all the different iterations and content that we can play with. But it's been very fun to watch Shopify evolve. And from my perspective, it's been like every time I look up and I want to try something, it's like there's a way for me to do it within the Shopify environment. Yeah. And so there's never been a question around I need to leave Shopify for something else. It's more been I see something that I really like, and then I'm like, gosh, do I want to acquire some other software?
Do you do it now or later?
Or if I wait 6 months, Shopify might have a tool for that already embedded. So let's see what happens. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking about business case here, and I think there's a slide in every replatforming case where you're speaking to the CFO, and I'm talking to you, of course. And it's probably the trickiest slide put together. And so obviously not disclosing anything material, but walk me through how you think about this in a case where you have a lot of legacy infrastructure, what are you counting? Are you counting conversion lift? Are you counting the base subscription? Are you counting the GMV tier you're going to fall into? Are you counting payment savings? Like, where do you land in terms of the order of things that you want to, because at some point you need to commit it to the CFO, not just sort of like, this is a nice idea.
Agreed. I mean, I think you need to kind of look at all of those lenses, right? Because it needs to make sense on a lot of different layers. Ultimately, though, when thinking about it and looking about it from a technology perspective, like Renee was mentioning, there's the next year of you, but there's also the like, what is the future going to hold and how is it going to drive value? And I think that's the real kind of unlock going back into the ecosystem of being able to drive value much more quickly. And so if we get caught up in like the dollars and cents of like conversion next month, we're an organization that's 100 years old this year. So we're undergoing lots of transformation in a lot of areas. Right. And so it's not always one thing. It's actually never one thing. I think everybody can understand that. And so it gets trickier to pinpoint. And so I wouldn't say, you know, absolutely Shopify is going to lift your conversion by X percent, you know, in year one. I think that you need to be smarter about it and really look at it in the grander scheme of things. We're taking the approach that this is our flagship store. It is by far our largest store. It represents our brand. It also drives a lot of sales. And what do we need for that? And so so we were looking at it in that kind of totality. And yeah. I'm lucky to have a CEO and a CFO that understand that point of view.
Yeah. So I guess the following question that is, what happens when you don't have a willing ear on the other side that is willing to make this, I don't know, call it velocity-oriented business case and recognize that the business is going to be what it's going to be? Like, maybe you might count on a little more conversion. Maybe you might count on a little more AOV, but it can't take it to the bank yet. What do the rest of us do that maybe don't have that willing ear on the other side? Is it just...
I would say, are you asking me again? Yes.
Yeah.
I would say for me, it's really focusing on the customer experience. And how you're driving that to the next level. Like, where are your customers to Scott's perspective? How are you reaching them? How will this allow you to do that? In our transformation and replatforming, we were kind of hyper-focused in three areas. So one was keeping it simple. I'm not customizing anything. I'm not trying to be overly complex. The retail business is not that complex. And secondly, like, how do we enable access to data and streamline our data and data governance? So product data being so important. So we also made the decision to put in a PIM, which we didn't have because we're vertically integrated and we don't do wholesale. But understanding that the what happens in your product data and how it's delivered to the customer is also going to drive value, especially looking at where things are going with you know, LLMs and AI and all of those things.
Yeah. So for your use case as a manufacturer that also has quite a bit of retail, you put in a PIM at the same time, sort of upstream of Shopify.
Upstream of Shopify. Yeah. Knowing that from a customer experience standpoint, like that's how we're going to get to where we need to be.
Yeah. Makes sense. Scott, you're super experienced. You've been on a lot of platforms. Make the case. Like, how do you think about building this case and responding to what Alara said done in your history?
Yeah. Cause I go back to Esprit and I think it's combination and really a lot of Renee, what you had said, because I feel like table stakes are around conversion. You just expect it to work with whatever platform, Shopify, Scale, go back to the old commerce tools day, pushing brands, like that's table stakes. I think that's why, Rick, to your point, it's a harder upsell because I still think there's a lot of noise in those metrics. And I think CFOs have actually progressed a lot to where it's like, oh, I'm not going to buy your little story about doing this one thing and we're going to see 50% conversion uplift and that's going to save the day. So for us, it was really, one, how do we streamline at Esprit, to give you a tangible example, we had SAP legacy. I had 30 developers supporting SAP that was 20 years old. So part of it is you had to have CIO, CTO, or expertise in-house. And it was really, how do we streamline our ecosystem? So one is just core expense. We had 40 different partners. We ran, as I alluded to earlier, we had Salesforce Commerce Cloud, Marketing Cloud, Data Cloud, Service Cloud. I'm sure we had MuleSoft in there. And the amount of internal tech required to support it, the amount of MarTech, which we haven't even talked about. So Telium and your entire really getting away from one, internal resources that are focused just on keeping the lights on versus can we push into React and get developers and product people that are focused on how do we digitally innovate the product itself. Two, eliminating the dependency for having 40 different tech partners. Can we get it down to 10 that are core and foundational to the business? And then the third part is you start looking at your run rate and overall OpEx going forward. And so that really started to resonate with our CFO and how we were looking at it. And then the last piece, just scalability, not only in terms of just traffic, but markets. It did take a little bit of work, to be honest, in Europe, because Shopify, and this is going back probably a year and a half, 2 years ago, still was viewed as a very, probably Renee, when you first launched on it, very much like, oh, you know, Shopify's for smaller brands. And I think they, and this is an area I think they still have some opportunity, is really leaning into that enterprise side. Yeah. And not so much like on the Forrester reporting component, but just so they have visibility that everything we've talked about, yeah, it can support revenue that can scale and that side of it. So long story short, there is really looking at just OpEx, overall efficiency, the non-dependency of having tech to just keep the lights on or internal dev to keep the lights on, and then reducing the amount of dependent systems in your ecosystem. That's what really resonated with the internal CFO and our CEO to get that pushed through.
I mean, I think Renee, go ahead, keep going.
That's very, very old information, but I do remember one of the things I was most startled by when I went over to Shopify 10 years ago was there was no downtime. Like, there's no, when you don't have 40 different systems and something broke along the way, there would be downtime all the time in our old system, and it would be so frustrating because we felt like we were controlling all the things that we could be. And now it's like, we're downtime when like DNS servers are down and the entire country's out. And we just jump over to another Shopify site. It feels like, that safety component around the simplicity of having not that many partners that are able to kind of really scale with you. The other thing I was going to kind of reinforce, like Alara, is customer experience, everything, but like dissonance kills, friction kills. Mm. I think consumers are getting so savvy and attention spans are getting so short that there's a benefit in being in a checkout environment that feels consistent and easy to shop. You're just kind of, I think being able to draft off of an expectation for an experience is really helpful. And then innovating in the spaces that you can. And
it's an interesting point, because as much as the innovation story is part of Shopify, I won't say lack of innovation, but there are certain parts, and Shopify, again, has fixed some of it. Lack of customization, standardization of certain areas. Alara, you've talked about that. Sometimes you want to be the same, and it's a good thing.
It is. I remember the days when you were trying to build like the coolest e-commerce parallax everything. It was like an immersive experience. Nobody wants that. Everybody like wants efficiency. Lives are crazy right now. They want to feel inspired by a brand. They want to connect. But we also know that like there's lots of opportunity to do that outside of your commerce ecosystem. And so as much as you want to showcase and inspire, you also want to bring that ease and simplicity and efficiency. And yes, the Shopify experience in a lot of ways is bringing an expectation that brings a trust that we used to talk about so much when you used to put all the little credit card things in your checkout to show that you're an actual trusted payment person or payment company. And so it brings that trust, that ease of use, that like these people are not like, you know, just anyone kind of thing. So I completely agree with you, Renee.
Yeah. And Renee, you've have an interesting perspective, and this will be kind of, I think, the last take for all everyone to came from is, having been on Shopify for a long time, there's some people who are like kicking the tires and wondering, like, what's the number one, like, if we're maybe all going to end with, like, what's the number one business case reason that you think lands in the boardroom to move to Shopify? And what's one thing that people should not put in there that is commonly touted, even by Shopify itself? Like, you shouldn't repeat this sales tactic.
I would say agility. Like, agility is the number one reason. I'm shocked that this tool has let us get this far without having to step into all of these different systems. Scott, I listened to your like 40 people, and then the MarTech and all the other components. Like,
crazy.
I think there's bigger implications even outside of the agility for your e-commerce function, but then all the other plugins that you're talking about using. It's extremely helpful. I think because we've been on Shopify for a very long time, they've come a very long way, I think, on the Shopify POS and the multiple stores and the brick and mortar operations that they have in place. I feel like for a long time, they weren't there. And I think they've been really good at deploying agility and getting a really great e-commerce ecosystem in place. But I think I still have questions. If you're thinking about using them and trying to use it also as an OMS or also as a tool that's going to help you across your entire business, I think push further there.
Skip that right now.
Yes, you just figure it out a little more and we'll see what goes on. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. How about you, Scott?
Yeah, I would say the same. It's really just their ecosystem, the ability to kind of test and learn. You know, we've seen a lot of opportunity and success with TikTok Shop, and that would have been much, much harder to stand up and lean into on other platforms. And I would say the same thing, Renee, is just what you were, I think the downstream system when Shopify says, oh, you don't really need an OMS, or
you need an OMS, this lightweight what you're saying.
Yeah, I think, and I think that's just part of where the industry has come. A lot of it has just been what I had said earlier. Yeah. Oh, you can run e-commerce standalone. So I think that's the one thing, is just really pay attention to, while the front end and core ecosystem that we've all talked about to run a, you know, lifestyle brand, but the downstream system integration, when they say it's easy or you don't need XYZ, really pressure test that and look into it.
Right. Makes sense. Right. Alara, why don't you wrap us up?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to maybe take this final note somewhere a little bit different, in that, yeah, like, I agree that agility is massive, that the ecosystem is massive. We're moving off of Marketing Cloud now onto Braze. That's going swimmingly. I think for large enterprise organizations that have been around for a long time, like mine, with lots of ingrained ways of working, do not underestimate the people change of getting to that agility.
Yeah.
That is, we thought a lot about it, and it's still, you know, not as smooth as we would have liked it to be. So I think that, you know, agility doesn't just happen, and it's part of your ways of working and go to market processes and all of these things. And going back to what you were saying, Scott, e-commerce can no longer be in a vacuum or in the closet down the hall. Like, it is part of a massive part of your business, no matter how big the revenue is. So, yes, that would be my advice for all the listeners.
Awesome. Well, this has been a fantastic conversation. I think you guys dropped knowledge very quickly, and so I think people will get a lot out of a short amount of time. We do have two more webinars coming up with a lot of the same players and also some new ones. Next week, we're going to be talking about omnichannel and unified commerce, which I think will be fun. And then finally, we're going to talk about design and IT dependency, which I know is near and dear to both Renee and Alara's heart. So appreciate everyone on the conversation, and join us next week, June 11th at 12:30 p.m. Eastern. If you're listening to this one later, and then the week after that on June 18th. So thanks everyone again for their participation.
Thanks.
Thanks, guys.